We're snorting cap rates and shooting up cash flow here at Deal Junkie. All right, welcome back to Deal Junkies. It's been a couple days since you last heard our A episode. This is our B episode. We're going to talk about deals, and we've had a few requests from our listeners to talk about bad deals. Mm-hmm.
Losers.
Deals where we lose money, get sued.
Don't people know we're perfect? We've never lost a penny.
I've never done a bad deal.
Well, that's Warren Buffett's rule number one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never lose money.
Which means we've never lost money, right?
Yeah, I didn't know who Warren Buffett was when I did some of my bad deals, but...
I throw that lost money in the education bucket, and then it's a cap. You know, it's a legitimate expense. It doesn't go on the record as a loss. It goes in a perfect 100-0 record.
Also, congrats to Warren Buffett. Berkshire's, like, well, by now...
$1 trillion company today.
$1 trillion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Never lost money. I don't see how that's possible. That's fine.
If that, lessons.
Yeah. How do you learn those lessons? All right. So we're going to talk about a bad deal. You guys, which bad deal are we going to talk about?
Who we threw you under the bus.
Oh, you have a
really good bad deal. Yeah.
Okay. I can talk about a bad deal. How should I frame
this? Well, I would say start with... Did you buy it by yourself? And what were you trying to do?
No, I don't buy any real estate by myself.
That's what I thought.
I always partner. Mm-hmm. So to give you some framework around how I got into my worst, ended up being several bad deals actually, but I decided, it's 2016. I had just bought the SMI brokerage. And at that time, my wife and I were running a company called Live Bar. And we were a national food manufacturing company that her and I started out of our kitchen in downtown Salem. It was kind of cool, but we decided we did not want to be part of that company anymore. So at that stage of life, we had sold our interest in the company. Later, we came back into that company, which we shouldn't have. But that's another story. So at that time, I woke up one day and I realized I own a brokerage and I generate 90%+ of all the income for this brokerage. So now I have to go do deals and I have to run a brokerage. And for a minute there, I thought I was kind of an idiot for signing up for this program. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, things are, you know, I've gone through a couple little blips where it was like 3 to 6 months were kind of slower than, I guess every broker probably goes through that. Nothing like the last couple of years that we've had. But prior to that, there were a few little blips in there. And I was going through one of these 6 month blips where as a broker, you go, you know, holy crap, I'm going to run out of money. I don't have enough in my pipeline. It's really hard to do deals right now for whatever reason. I was going through a lull. So I woke up one day and I said, I know what I'll do. I'll flip houses. Oh boy. So I didn't know how to flip houses. I'm not a contractor. I wasn't a residential broker. But I sort of had this feeling like, well, if I went out and I bought a really cheap house and I fixed it up, it'd be just like an apartment turn. I could put lipstick on it. And if it didn't sell, I could just rent it out. And I just own rental houses. No big deal. Mm-hmm. So I, of course, being the guy that does not do a deal unless I have a partner, I called a friend of mine, and he was one of these guys like you love that is around flying around the world teaching people about real estate. And so he was a flipping, you know, speaker or whatever. And so I called him up and I said, hey, I see that you're out flipping houses and you're out speaking about flipping houses. I said, I think we should flip some houses.
You knew this individual?
Yeah. We went to high school together. We were buddies in high school. And so he said, well, you know, his word was, he said, it's serendipitous that you would call me today because I'm actually ending my partnership with my other partners that I'm flipping with and I'm looking for a new partner. I said, okay, well, let's grab coffee. Let's talk. And so we sat down and we went over the business model and how it works and all the stuff. And I said, okay, what's the downside? Where's the risk? And his answer was, well, you know, to be honest with you, I just don't really think there is any.
So red flag for the audience, number one, ending partnership, let's start another one. There's red flag number one.
Well, ending red a flag number two, there's no risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You guys are picking up. You're smart. Yeah.
I love this guy.
See, these people in the room with me get it. Okay, well, what are we going to do? I said, well, what's the problem then? If there's no downside, then why don't we just go buy every flip house and flip every single house? He says, well, to be honest, most people just don't know how to find money. They just can't find the money to do this. So, you know, not unlike our last episode where we talked about fundraising, some people do not have the skill set to go out and raise capital to fundraise. I happen to have a ability to do that. I just hate it. I don't like fundraising. But I was able to do it. And so I called up one of my partners who I own apartment complexes with. And it's another kind of story where I'd helped this family make a lot of money, millions of dollars in finding some apartment deals and things like that. And I had partnered with them on these apartment deals. And so we were close. We're still close to this day. And so I called him up. He's the money guy. All right, I got an idea. I'm going to get out of this Live Bar thing, but I'm going to go flip houses. And I'm looking for a partner. And he said, I'm so glad you called me. I don't want to be your lender. I want to be your partner, and I'll be the money guy behind this to get it going. Okay. So I'm thinking, I mean, a good deal gets better and better.
Dream team.
He was a pretty sophisticated dude too, right?
So my partner with the money had flipped over 300 houses. He owned, I don't know how many units, but he owned hundreds of apartment units, and we own together today probably 300 or 400 apartment units. So, very sophisticated guy, lots of money. I don't know what he's worth, probably $100 million plus. And so, so I thought, well, how can I go wrong? I got this guy here who wants to run the projects. He's the visionary. He knows where to find the deals. He knows how to make them look cute and sell them, and he's all wrapped up in that world. And then I got this guy over here who's flipped 300 houses, and he's got $100 million, and he's willing to just write checks and let us go do whatever we want to do. So, I mean, come on now. I mean, you have to do this, right? How could?
What was your role within the partnership? Or are you just the connector?
I don't know what my role was. It was just my idea.
You were the sucker that he got to go raise the money for the.
Yeah, that's okay, probably okay. Right. That's probably right. In retrospect. Yeah. So right out of the gate, okay, we found a couple of houses. We need, you know, a few hundred grand or whatever. Hey, call my partner, need a few hundred grand. There's like no paperwork, no contracts. He just wires a few hundred grand into my bank account, and we go buy a couple of houses. We're off to the races, you know. So we decide, okay, it's time to set up an LLC, and we got to be, you know, we should make this formal. Well, my partner who was going to run the project says, well, I probably shouldn't go on the LLC because the IRS is after me and I owe him lots of money. And it probably wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for me to be on this entity with you guys.
Red flag three?
I'll point them all out.
Is this guy's name Chris, by the way?
No.
It's not. Okay.
So then I went back to my money partner guy and I said, okay, we're setting up an LLC and this is how it's going to go down or whatever. And he says, well, he goes, yeah, I want to be your partner, but I don't really think I should be on the LLC either. And so I set up an LLC in my name only, single member, disregarded entity. So I have two partners, but I'm the only one on the entity. So we buy these two houses and we're having a hard time getting them, you know, we're having a hard time figuring out how we're going to actually flip them. And so then I find out after about 2 or 3 months after we bought them. So a lot of people, you know, if you know how to flip and you're listening, you're going to be laughing at me right now because you're 2 or 3 months in, you've already flipped the house. It's already done. You're already back on the market. We were still out looking for a contractor to come in and help us flip these houses. So we had our own, we ended up building our own team. I had a payroll. So we got our CCB license because they told us if we're going to flip more than 3 houses in a year, we got to be CCB. So we get licensed CCB. I get a payroll. I hire, at that time, I think it was 10 or 12 guys. We're running a full construction company. My wife becomes the bookkeeper and accountant for our company. And now suddenly I'm running a construction company. Like, one day, let's buy a couple of shitty houses. Let's clean them up. And if they don't sell, I'll put renters in. The next day, I'm running a construction company. Just like that, overnight. So my wife had signing rights, and my partner sees that I'm able, local partner decides, okay, well, it's really easy for Gabe to raise money. So I got a better idea. Rather than doing lipstick flips, we'll get in the redevelopment game and we'll go find houses in Portland and Lake Oswego that have extra basement footage or attic footage. And we'll add, we'll cut off, you know, one floor of the house and add another floor, and we'll put a master bedroom upstairs instead of downstairs, and we'll put a bathroom on to this one, and like we'll turn a 2,000 square foot house into a 3,000 square foot house. And so I went to my money partner and I said, okay, we got this new idea. We're going to buy these houses. We're going to add footage to them, because this is going to be, it's really hard. Like, now finding the money wasn't the problem. Now the other partner couldn't find any deals. And so he wanted to start buying deals on the MLS. So he hooks up with a broker out of Lake Oswego. This broker sees us coming from a million miles away and just goes like, oh my God, like this guy, he got rich on us. So he
was that guy's name Daryl?
No, it's not Daryl. I'm happy to know that Mike has a similar story to tell.
I know all the places.
This is making me feel much better.
It's PTSD. Thank you.
Triggering. It is PTSD. Appreciate. Okay, so it gets better. So we decide, okay, well, you could buy a lot more houses if you use the money partner's money to use as down payment, gap funds, and we'll go out and we'll use a hard money lender. So we hooked up with a hard money lender, 12% interest, 3 points, whatever. And we go out, and at that time, my partner, I was busy brokering deals, running the brokerage, doing my own thing. So he was out identifying these deals, driving around, looking at them, figuring out ARV and budgets and everything else. So he comes up with the idea, for whatever reason. At the time, I didn't really know why, but we had to have 10 flip houses going at once. Mike is crying right now.
Yeah, I'm so sad for you.
Okay. So later, he kept talking about HGTV, Chip and Joanna Gaines. I've never watched one of their shows, but I hate them both with passion. I hope they burn in hell for eternity. Okay. now you're really getting me fired up. Okay. So later I find out, if you want to be on HGTV, they won't talk to you unless you're flipping at least 10 houses. And so there were some videos going on back and forth. And later on in the story, HGTV supposedly accepted us to do a pilot show, and they offered us $40,000. If we got picked up, we had $40,000 they'd pay us for our first season. And then after that, you can make more money and you can get sponsorships, you can do all this other stuff. And so it became very clear to me at that point that my partner, local partner, was trying to become famous on HGTV. And he showed up one day at my house, and he was incredibly excited it was like his moment in life. He said, we got accepted, we're going to do a pilot. And I said, no, I am not going to sell my privacy for $40,000. I never wanted to be on a HGTV show. I'm not into all this stuff. But I think that the lesson there is that a lot of folks sit and watch that crap and they think it's real, and it's not. It's television. Anything on television is fake. Everything is fake. It's not real. It's not how it works. It's not how the numbers work. It's not how deals work. Okay. So if you're watching those shows, just know they're lying to you, and you're laying in bed thinking, this is really exciting. I really want to buy an old piece of crap and make it beautiful like this, and then I get to make $50,000 in 3 weeks or whatever it is they do these flips in. So all of that is a lie. I'll just point that out right now. Hopefully we don't get sued by HGTV.
Unless you do it correctly.
We might get sued for defecation by HGTV. I just defecated on HGTV. Okay. Anyway, can you tell I have some resentments around this? Okay. So here's an idea. Well, we need 8 more houses. Well, let's go buy 8 more houses. Well, we need to borrow $5 million in hard money funds. Well, I need to raise some capital for that. So, you know, I call my partner up and I say, you know, whatever it is that we need, another 600, 800 grand or whatever. And he's great. He's just like, whatever you need. I'm like, hey, we got these deals under contract. We got earnest money. We got this, we got that. I need, you know, I'd call him up and go, I need 600 grand, 800 grand. He would just wire it into my bank account. No paperwork, no notes, no nothing, not even on the LLC with me. So in my infinite wisdom, I signed on to $5 million worth of hard money debt in my name only, in an entity that only I owned and controlled. And somewhere along the way, my money partner flew up. He lives in LA. He flew up to check in on our projects. And we walked a couple of the projects, and he got into my car with me, and he says, "You're not going to like what I'm about to say." And I said, "What is that?" He says, "I have no idea what you guys are doing right now, but I am no longer going to fund your projects." I said, "Well, I've got $50,000 a month just in interest payments that I have to make." He said, "Well, I'm not going to throw good money after bad." I said, "But I personally guaranteed that $5 million. I don't care." So here we go. So luckily in those days, I was an apartment broker, and I was learning how to broker deals, and I was learning how to broker bigger deals. And I was able, I didn't have the money to do this. So I was able to broker enough business to pay that $50,000 a month payment and to keep these projects alive. So the one of the things I learned, well, I learned what downside risk is in a flip.
Mm-hmm.
Downside risk is you go borrow money, you take investor money for gap funds, you go borrow millions of dollars or whatever it is. If say you're just doing one house, you borrow the money to buy this house and fix it up. And if your budgets are wrong, which they all were, all of our projects were probably realistically $300,000 projects that needed about a 12 to 18 month timeline. We had an executive summary that said they were all 3 to 4 month flips that would cost about $100,000 to $150,000. Right there, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that to get a house to a point where we could demo it, I thought demo would cost a few grand. We were spending $20,000 to $30,000 to do the demo the right way on some of these houses. By the time we would have it demoed, I'd have 3 or 4 months worth of hard money interest I'd paid on it. I'd paid, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to demo these things. And we're taking them down to the studs. We're doing new walls. We're doing all sorts of crazy stuff, plumbing, electrical, HVAC. Like, we're rebuilding these homes. And so I would get them to the point, right to the point where you're ready to go to drywall. You've done all your roughing. You're ready to go back to drywall. Just to get to that stage, in some cases, I was $200,000 to $250,000 in to that project, just to get to that stage, to the point where it looks like it's not even done. It looks like you just started tearing it apart. So then my partner comes in and he says, "Well," I said, "Well, what am I going to do?" And he goes, "Well, sell them." I said, "Well, we got like a couple hundred grand into these things and they look like crap." And he says, "Well, go tell the people you're selling them to that we put a couple hundred grand into them and see if they'll give you that money. And I'll let you guys have one guess. Will people pay you your 200 grand if you don't go, if the building hasn't gone to, you know, and been finished?" No.
No.
The answer is no. So I had buildings that I had bought for, say, 400 grand that I was in 650 that we couldn't even sell for 400 grand. Mm-hmm. Because now you can't even live there. Now it's a building that's torn apart. So you got to try to find a way to get these things to the finish line. So at the end of the day, we had 10 houses. I think we completed 5 of them. 5 of them we sold incomplete. And we lost $2.1 million in my first foray into flipping. First try. Now, I will say I'm a big thinker and I only do big things. And so flipping one house was not going to be in the cards for me.
Yeah.
And if we had had good budgets and we had, well, actually what would have happened is if we knew how to build a budget, we would have never bought any of these houses.
Yeah.
And we would have not never gone into that debt because I had a partner already that would give us the money who would not have been on us like these other guys who they say, "Oh, you need 3 or 4 months. Great. We'll give you a 4 month loan." And guess what happens at month 4? You need to pay another point to extend it for another 3 or 4 months. Well, you do that on an 18 month project and now you've paid 6, 7, 8 points plus 12% interest. So actually when I went back to the end to see what we had lost, it almost matched up exactly to what our hard money lender made.
Mm-hmm.
We lost 2.1, they made 2.1. So the lessons, you know, I partnered with somebody that I shouldn't have partnered with. I talk about Paul Curley a lot. Paul and I became very close friends throughout this. The silver lining is infinite. It's the best. This doing this was the best thing that ever happened to me in my professional life.
How long were you into your relationship with Paul at this time?
Paul and I probably 4 years,
okay,
something like that. And we were not partners at the time, but I would go to him and I would sit down and go, you know, I was about ready to have a heart attack. I didn't sleep for a year and a half, and I'd sit down with him and tell him my woes, and he would laugh at me, and he'd go, you know, he'd say, let me guess, your partner doesn't have any money.
Is that when your relationship really kind of started growing into that type of...
Yeah, I mean, I think it took it from the professional to the personal level. Yep. I mean, because I'm crying on his shoulder and going like, what do I do? And he'd already been through it before, and he'd had bad partners or bad experiences and things like that. And so he was able to see what was coming, similar to the way you guys come and ask me what's going to happen next, and I tell you what's going to happen
and
next.
And then we don't listen, and then we do it anyway.
It's the cycle. Everyone goes through it.
It was so weird.
Just think, if you would have listened to Paul, you have $2.1 more million.
Well, yeah, if I would have asked him, he probably would have told me never to do it, but I was already all the way in. And so, so never partner with somebody who doesn't have money, and can't write that check the day that it needs to be written. So my partner, the money partner, he says, okay, well, there's three of us. Let's split that loss, you know, three ways. Okay. $700,000, $700,000, $700,000. So, okay, I'll do that. And he credited me towards what I had been feeding it already. And so I paid him back. We got to that point where I'd paid back my $700,000, and he flew back up and we had dinner, and he said, you're really a man of your word, and I love you, and you're part of our family. He said, but I have some information I don't think you're going to like very much. And I said, well, oh boy, this feels like I'm sitting in the car again. This is a brilliant Indian man, wonderful guy. And he says, it seems as if we didn't have three partners. We only had two. Yeah. because my local partner hadn't paid back any of his portion. And so he said, I need you to pay me another $350,000.
So he split that remaining seven with you.
Yeah. And I said, thank you very much. And I paid him back $350,000 with interest. And to this day, I never lost any relationships over this, which is good for me, because that's the most important part. I would never partner with that guy again. And he went off and did some things that I think are probably not good. It was just trusting the wrong people to be able to follow through. And I will say that there was never a lack of confidence. So my money partner would call our visionary partner the decorator.
Confidence from you or your partner?
Confidence from my local partner who didn't have any money. So the thing, like the whole there,
and then he built confidence up in you, I assume.
Well, it was just kind of like a the whole thing about there's no downside risk.
Yep.
One of the things I've learned about people is if they are 100% confident, you can't trust them.
Yep.
Because I know my stuff, and you can ask me a question and I'll say, well, this is the way I see it. However, I could be wrong. If you brought me new information, or I met maybe, you know, I'm still willing to accept that I don't know everything, and there might be somebody that has better information than I have. If somebody tells you, if you say, well, what about this or what about that? And they say, nope, this is the way it goes. That's the way it goes. And they're 100% confident. I think that's a red flag.
Yep.
So anyway, you guys can ask me questions or whatever. I will say it's the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. It's when I went through a metamorphosis here. So not sleeping for 18 months gives you a lot of time to think. I grew my faith. I grew my wisdom. I grew my cojones. I grew my relationships. Like, it really taught me so much. I feel like it was like a boy to man experience. Yep.
So if you want to become a man, start flipping houses. No, I have a question. So the 2.1 million, like, that was in debt that you lost. So you sold these houses and still, like, where'd all the money go? Like, how'd this debt get paid back? Because you couldn't even pay back these hard money loans, I'm assuming. It was worth less than what you owed.
You pay back the hard money, you couldn't pay back the gap funder.
And he put $2.1 million in cash?
Yeah, well, that, I mean, I, I don't remember exactly how it stacks up between debt and equity stack, but I had money in, he had money in, the lenders had to be paid
back. You were able to pay off the lenders though, and then just not pay him with his.
Yeah, so that's an important point to make is we never foreclosed on anything. I've never had a repo, a bankruptcy or anything like that. So it didn't take me down. It very well could have. And I was just coming out of, you know, I had just started to sort of build something back again. And then I jump into this stupid thing as a side project to make a little extra money. And then, you know, it very well could have taken me down.
Were you buying other deals at this time too?
Yeah, we were buying. So one of the reasons why I wasn't paying attention is I was out buying apartments with my money partner, and we were buying deals, and we had picked up, I mean, we bought, you know, during that period, we probably bought 5 or 6 deals that were just killer deals. I mean, we made a lot of money on it. So while we were losing, you know, millions on this hand, we were making more millions on the other hand. And so it wasn't all bad. And I think that I probably built a different relationship with that partner too, because of what we went through together. Like, you're a different partner if you can make it through. I always say, really, you know, I mean, there are good deals and bad deals, and there are good partners and bad partners, but a good partnership will not turn into a bad partnership because of a bad deal. So I like to have partners we can win and we can lose, and we're still good partners. We're better off because we were together through that process. So the problem is most of the time you don't know you have a bad partner until the deal goes bad. And then everybody, the covers come off, and then you realize, you know, what people are made of when they start losing money. Like, do I have to write a check? What is my personality change into? And, you know, how do we all get along once we're losing money?
So have you done a bad deal with a good partner, and then you guys just figure?
Well, that's an example of a very bad business, really, of multiple bad deals with a bad partner and a good
and a
partner.
Good, oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
That's a great part of the story, is you get a good and a bad out of it. And there's a couple things. One thing I see where people fuck up a lot is easy access to money when you don't know what you're doing. That is like the recipe for disaster. If you have cash and you do not have experience, don't use your cash. Go get a hard money to underwrite it. Go get other people to look at it. Have people make sure that your numbers make sense. The other thing is, you just went and made your way out of it. It's like, you didn't just dwell on this thing. I got to go make more money. And you focused on the forward to get out of the
bank. That was something that Paul taught me, is you got to grow out of your problems.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, I think the instinct is just to kind of crawl in a hole and die.
Yep.
It's like, oops, I effed up. I'm done. Like, let's just give up and we'll lose these houses and file bankruptcy.
And let me guess, your local partner, he probably peaced out early on in the process and just started trying to make his own money wherever it was and didn't even care about you at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as fun anymore when you can't do the decorating and the visionary part of it. Now we're just trying to get rid of these houses. He stuck around, and he didn't just necessarily disappear, but he just wasn't able to write a check. He just didn't have any money. So, I mean, he probably could work on some character issues as well. But even if he had bad character and he was able to write a check, he would have been a better partner.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The no money part of it's really probably worse than bad character. So, you know, I mean, everybody runs around and they want to, we've talked about this before, how real estate is an ego stroker, and talking about deals and doing deals, you know, hooking up with your residential agent out of Laco, and he picks you up in the Range Rover and you go walk, you know, shitty properties all day, and you're writing offers, and, you know, we're doing earnest money. And, you know, of course we lost earnest money. I mean, just all the stupid things that you learn I didn't know, cause I'd never flipped a house before. Mm-hmm. So to this day, I couldn't tell you how to flip a house and be successful at it. Mike can tell us how to do that. But my guess is that you have a team, and you know what it takes to flip a house, and you know the pitfalls that you can fall into, and you have a backup plan if that house doesn't sell, and so on and so forth. I think that one of the biggest problems we had, and what my money partner points out, is the way we went into this with the debt. really set us up for failure, because the way he had set us up, if I had just taken his money and recycled that and done those first couple, well, we don't sell them whatever, we rent them, and then we recycle that capital when we can, and we go do a couple more and a couple more, a couple more. The dream of being big shots and owning, you know, having 10 flips at once and being on HGTV and all that really is what set us up for failure, because we stepped into an arena we weren't ready for. And even if you're teaching these real estate classes, you can't believe some of the crap that came out of his mouth that they teach these people. I was pissed. There was a class they taught that said that if you don't want to pay taxes, it's very easy. All you have to do is set up an LLC. If you conduct business within an LLC, you're tax-free. You can now go out and you can buy and sell real estate and never pay taxes again. This is the answer. You just buy an LLC.
You can do that.
That's what Mike does.
You could just not pay the taxes.
Yeah.
You can do that till you fucking go to jail.
Taxation theft.
That was Gabe's statement.
It's still illegal. It's still illegal. Go spend $25,000 to have somebody tell you that you can commit tax fraud by setting up an LLC.
Yeah, the education companies are the most disgusting part of the industry for the most part, in my opinion.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't have a good experience.
Except Best of Home Solutions. Yeah. Those guys are pimps.
We actually have a pretty good class on right now.
Jeez. Yeah, the education, the contractors, the wholesalers, mm-hmm. even the retail brokers. In my experience, you know, everybody was there at every step of that process to make money, and nobody on our team was willing to step. I mean, I started reading these budgets, and I don't know. I mean, you got 500 line items, and I'm going, I don't know. I'm not a builder. I don't know what this stuff costs. It seems like, in my mind, I thought it was cheap. Well, isn't this cheap? Well, yeah, but we got our guys and we can do this and we do this. This is where we save money. And then, of course, every time you go to take a draw, it's like, well, we've got a bill for $10,000 and our draw is only $5,000.
Well, and you even said it in there, and it's because I do this. I know exactly what you're talking about, the business model. And you're like, our executive summary said these were 4 to 6 month flips and they're 150 grand. The reality is what you also said was they're 300 grand. It's 8 to 9 months before you even begin demo. And it's 12 to 18 months before you're actually done.
Oh, when I had a house in Lake O that had a legacy tree in front of it.
Yep, yep.
It took me 9 months just to figure out how to get the right kind of fence around.
And it probably cost $5,000 for that fence to put.
Oh, it was. Yeah. I had to put up two fences. So it wasn't all. I mean, there are just things that you learn. We did two or three different ram jack foundations for $50,000. We did. Everything that you could possibly think of that would stop us. We had in Portland, we had one deal where we had renovated it to a level where the city said, this is no longer a renovation. This is actually like
a major alteration.
This is a major alteration, and we're going to charge you SDC charges all over again. We're going to make you put in a new meter, charge SDC fees like we're building a new home. You know why? Because the house was so old, it had never had an SDC charge. Mm-hmm. We cleaned it up to a certain point. They said, well, you passed this threshold and now you got to spend the $20,000 or whatever it is on SDCs. I mean, I learned a lot.
And it's funny, so that is a really good business model that a lot of people did really, really successfully that no one does anymore. And part of it is just the way the process got changed and market conditions changed. And you probably got into it right as it was transitioning out of becoming a good business.
So take your, when you talk about building your timelines, take your money that you just borrowed and think about how the clock is ticking on that money.
Mm-hmm.
Now align that with a business model that you're relying completely on the government to approve your plan to move forward before you can finish your project. And now you just take and set yourself up for failure because you've got your money with a clock ticking on it, and you've just gone into a situation you have no control over whatsoever. And they tell you, yeah, this process takes 3 weeks. Nope. Mm-hmm. 3 months. This process takes 6 weeks. Nope. 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every single step of the way, you're sitting on that thing. Your loan is expiring. And you're paying points on a loan waiting just to try to push something through the city. Whether it's Salem, Portland, Lake Oswego, it doesn't matter where you're at. I think Lake Oswego was probably the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a legacy.
But it scared me away from hard money. We still do use private money from time to time in the apartment world. But it scared me away from doing deals where we rely on the bureaucracy for our timeline. So if I could just buy that deal with cash and go, oh, I'm going to go mess around with Lake Oswego. If it takes 6 months, great. A year, great. 2 years, whatever. It's just my money. It doesn't matter. Like, I want them to get it. But if I got a clock ticking on my money, I'm not going to pair those two things together. I'm not going to put hard money, you know, hot potato money, I call it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put hot potato money with a government official who is not hot potato at all.
Mm-hmm. Clarification too. On the class model, the biggest piece with that one was he was saying this guy was going around teaching classes, not flipping houses.
Well, that's the other thing.
So that's it. Trevor's teaching a class about what he is currently doing.
You want to know a funny part of the story? So one of his ex-partners actually is an SMI broker now.
No way.
Knows what he's doing. Yeah. He had the right partners before. He was the visionary, and they were the ones that were actually, they were out doing all the work. And so I found out later that he had never really flipped a house at all, that he was just kind of like me in the sense of like, I got an idea.
Well, what's the first thing he did? He's a con man. He gave you 100% confidence. He's a con man. That's all his role was to build your confidence up, to then build confidence up with someone who had lots of money.
How does Mike see that so fast? A con man. I wish I could see that. I wish I could have seen that. Everybody sees that when I tell that story.
Because I've been through it.
Next week, Mike will talk about how he lost $12 million.
It's the only area I can 8X Gabe's story.
This is why I don't like raising. This is why I don't like the fundraising model, is because I feel obligated to make sure that we're a good fiduciary and that folks get a return on their money and that we're handling it well. So now that we do fundraise and we do, when we set up SMI fund management, it was one of the number one things that I said, I will not be part of this company unless we have our securities attorney on staff. We have our real estate CPA on staff. There's a reason why our COO and our CFO are our real estate professionals that we rely on every day, that we trust, and everything's above board.
Yep.
And it's super, super clean, because taking people's money is no joke. You can do a lot of crazy things in life, but taking their money and losing it is not cool.
Yep. So that's where you don't sleep at night.
Yep.
See you guys next week.
No other questions about that one. That's enough to make everybody go, don't flip houses. Yeah, don't flip houses until you've got a team for it. You know what you're doing.
Well, we'll have Mike Nuss share how to properly flip houses later on. So wait till you hear Mike talk about it. Think about what Gabe said in the meantime.
Yeah, dwell on that for a week.
Let's see if Mike can get me back into flipping. But
that's all I was thinking about. Oh, I could do it so much better, Gabe. Do you want a partner?
I can find the money.
I can be your boy. Hey, no downside. 100% success rate. I've always paid money back.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to Deal Junkies. I hope to never tell that story again. See you next time.